People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Treat me like you did the night before, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Big wins for Chelsea, Everton and the Toon in the Cup. It's Thursday, 24th of September. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Vidushina Hantaraja.
Hello, everybody. Oh, it's Thursday. What a thrilling Thursday it's going to be as well. Vish, you did a little dance there.
I did, yeah.
Only in his chair, though.
Only in his chair.
I didn't want to get up because I think there's enough wires here that I'd trip myself up.
I'm defying quite James Brown.
Yeah. Get up.
Off of that thing.
Yeah. Take it to the bridge for at least. Take it to Stamford Bridge.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And we will do in a moment, ladies and gentlemen. But I tell you what, who felt very good indeed last night was, of course, Josh Brownhill with that goal for Burnley.
Why are the defenders not getting out to him quicker? I'd have him in first thing this morning.
such a good goal. Do you look at the Sistine Chapel and look for the smudges?
I do, yeah. I think you'll find it's pronounced the Sixtine Chapel. You've embarrassed yourself there. Yeah.
Is it really?
No, of course it isn't. Goodness,
I don't know. I've pronounced so many things wrong on this show. I've got to be careful.
I was going to say, no, of course not. It's a brilliant goal. Absolutely fantastic.
Oh, but it was the best goal of the evening.
And a further evidence, if more was needed, which it wasn't,
no,
that the ball hitting some kind of part of the frame of the goal on the way in probably makes it, would you say, 10 times better?
Yeah, definitely. And also the fact that they're box goals now, the fact that all teams have box goals. Yeah. You know, there was a stage, it was probably about 30 years ago, when, you know, you drop down a couple of levels and you've got those weird little angle goals.
Yeah. I don't like...
Box goals are good goals.
If I'm standing on the byline and I'm looking at the goal side on, if I don't see a deep net, It doesn't satisfy me.
No. Yeah.
I don't like a shallow net. Do you?
No, I don't think I do. The nets that were always very questionable, and I will find favour here with one Luke Aaron Moore, were at the Dell at Southampton.
100%. Famous for it.
Very strange nets they had there.
Was it Mark Hughes who scored
there?
It wasn't given because it hit the advertising board and came out.
And it obviously a volley.
Absolute Mickey Mouse club.
All your Southampton mates going to...
Oh, yeah, all of them.
He doesn't have any.
They'll be queuing up. I don't have any mates. No Southampton mate.
Can't be that choosy.
No.
But yeah, I mean, what a
beauty. And Marcus, a worthy mention.
A little kiss off the bar.
Yes.
A little smooch as it goes past.
The best of that would be on the side of the bar, bounce, hit the bar again, go in.
Mm.
You're not stopping that keeper. Pick it out. Let's go again.
It's
pick the bones
true out
of that and let's take the kickoff because you are not stopping that.
You're not stopping it, you flipping so-and-sos. But I'll tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. We mentioned Stamford Bridge. Let's go straight there now. They gubbed Barnsley. those little slugs turning up to the capital thinking that they...
With their northern dreams.
Gerhard Struber's slugs.
Hang on a minute, it's a proud town. Behave yourselves, all right?
And what constitutes a gubbing? Give people a reminder, how many goals we're talking?
A thrashing, I would say. I'd bet, because a 3-0 could be a bit of a gubbing, depending on the manner.
Yeah, true.
You know,
true.
I think it's got to be at least three.
I don't think there needs to be any finesse with a gubbing, because a 3-0, to term it a gubbing, you'd have to look into the game, pull out a few XG stats and possessions. I think you need it unequivocally on the scoreline. This is a gubbing. You have been gubbed.
Marcus has got his
Gabby
own.
Allen himself.
Marcus has got his own little algorithm. Uh-huh. He decides it's a gubbing or it isn't. I'll tell you what made it a gubbing. It's always nice to look at the Opta stats after the game and the Opta information and see that four separate Barnsley players committed what is technically an error.
Right.
Four separate goals were technically an error.
Ah, so it should have been only 2-0 then.
And it wouldn't have been a gubbing.
No, it wouldn't have been.
A very professional
They'd
performance.
They've saved themselves that ridiculousness. Kai Havertz, of course, scored a hat trick. Lampard was very pleased with his young German there, wasn't he? He was purring. He said he was so pleased for him. Lots of nights like this at Stamford Bridge to come for him, Vish.
Gets Barnsley with no fans.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, the glamour, the romance.
Yeah. I mean, the deeper they go in the cup, that's not going to happen.
Kai Havertz went, that's what I signed.
Yeah. True, yeah.
I felt, I mean, I don't mean this, it's hard to think about the phrases and like, well, it's not patronising because Barnes are a proud club and, you know, an important club and there's no doubt about that. They've got a good history as well. Mm. But it's not easy for them coming up against, you know, a front four of which Kai Havertz, who's one of the world's best young football players, that's absolutely clear. And the way he finished, I think it was his first goal, it was a great example of how much quicker of thought he is of players at a slightly lower level. Because, he casually passed it past the goalkeeper before the keeper even really knew what was happening. Yeah. And that's the quickness of thought that you get from those very top players.
It is, yeah. There's been a bit of chat where Havertz will fit into the Chelsea system, Vish. Well, probably just there.
Yeah,
well, put him in there.
That'll work.
Yeah. I wonder if he was helped by having Tammy Abraham in front of him. And
well, he said that, didn't he? He said he enjoyed playing with.
The link-up play was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really good,
very well. And again, that was something that pleased Lampard.
Yeah, and similarly, I think there were a few times last season where Tammy Abraham looked a little bit isolated because he doesn't really have he didn't have anyone like that last season to a point. I thought Havertz looked very sharp again. Obviously. Because of the drop in quality, you know, he's not going to get that kind of space on a Saturday or Sunday, let's say.
Well, unless you're playing a handful of teams in the Premier League.
It does depend on who they're playing. True, yeah. I mean, the Champions League, you have the keys to the pitch, probably, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's fair. But, you know, as Luke said, you know, Barnsley coming against a team of that much quality, they're always going to be undone. They didn't have to help them as much as they did, though.
Yeah.
I feel like for about four of those Chelsea goals, I mean, obviously you mentioned that the four Barnsley players had errors next to their name, but I feel like two touches before Chelsea put the ball in the net, the touch was from a Barnsley player.
Yeah, it was.
Either playing it across his goal or just miscontrolling
the
ball.
It's almost like Barnsley went, right, let's get this over with. And so I went, no, the game is still the same length.
Yeah.
Once it's done, it's not done until 90 minutes. So you're still going to have to play the same amount of time. You don't have to give him quite so much help. You know,
it's not like a best of seven series where you get to four and like, right, okay, that's done. Let's go. Stop this. Play the other three.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The interesting thing about it, though, is when you look at the score lines yesterday, I know we'll talk about a few other games, but I kind of went into this midweek thinking, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if teams tank this because there's nothing really to get out of it to a point. You don't want to, unless you have real ambitions to win it, there's absolutely nothing in it playing these midweek games. Mm-hmm. And I know Kate and the team yesterday touched on it in terms of how ridiculous the schedule is. But, I mean, you know, beyond kind of having their pants pulled down to a point, as did Morecambe by losing 7-0, I don't think they'll think twice about what happened yesterday, Barnsley.
No, I don't think that.
And I don't think they should either.
No.
But, I mean, the old kind of conventional wisdom would probably suggest, and it's definitely something you and I have spoken about a lot on this show over the years, is that, you know, when you come up against a big team, you don't really want to get battered because the confidence can take a knock and all the rest of it. But I think in this context, it's probably not irrelevant, but certainly not of that much importance.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
And the other aspect is, you know, a lot of those fixtures are for fans. You know, Barnsley would have taken a great deal of fans to Stamford Bridge last
Definitely.
Night. And, you know, it would have been a huge deal for Morecambe to welcome Newcastle. And, yeah, without that you'd lose a bit of that. And beyond the personal pride of players and wanting to test yourselves against better opposition, or even, you know, I don't want to sound frivolous about this, but even a Barnsley player yesterday maybe getting Kai Havertz his shirt, you know, that's quite a big deal.
Yeah. That's patronising now. You get the rounds of patronising.
We can't do that now, can you? Because of
Because of the Rona.
Yeah.
Well, because of Corona, we can't patronise people.
It's one of the symptoms.
By the way, I've been dying to say this for a few minutes. I'm well aware that I mixed a metaphor when I said he'll have the keys to the pitch earlier.
Yeah, no, not necessarily, because you might have to unlock to get to the pitch.
Okay.
Yeah, they lock up, you know, five-a-side pitches and stuff like that.
You've been very generous to the gentleman, and I like it. It's a nice sea change.
I'll give you some more shit
waiting
later on.
for years.
Can I just jump in really quickly on a more general point? Because we're going to talk about some other games in the EFL Cup where there were a lot of goals. And I think, without question now, I don't think it's too early to suggest that, based on what happened last weekend and based on what happened last night, that we're seeing players play without a lot more without fear now. I think we're seeing goals because people are taking more risks, and I think that's why. I think it will continue throughout the season because there's what's I think often forgotten is that teams play behind closed doors friendlies against other teams all the time, and sometimes they're obviously even playing against reserve 11s or whatever, and they're quite used to work on shape, to play on things and to try things in a game situation where there are no fans. And I wonder if even subconsciously this is now translating through, because it doesn't feel as big as it perhaps should, because it's impossible to replicate with that.
That's a very interesting point, actually. It certainly felt like that on the first day of the season at Anfield, with the 4-3 against Leeds, especially from a Liverpool point of view.
That's what first made me think of it. Yeah. It's probably too early to say then, but I think as we move through the season, you might find it carries on.
So what the media, what the press, what needs to happen there is ramp it up.
Yeah.
And just not let them get away with this nonsense.
I don't want goals to
Less goals!
I don't want goals to become boring. Like we said earlier in the week about how, you know, Portsmouth delivered with a 0-0.
Yeah.
So they're not subscribing to it.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
What do you think about that? Now you've had a few days to reflect on it. Do you feel the same way?
Sort of. I think there are loads of factors that go into it. You know, what you touched on there about, you know, players being willing to risk things. I think you can strip that down as well and say that players who are often good in training, you don't quite translate in front of a crowd, are now feeling, I suppose...
Were you one of them?
More bullshit. No, I could only do it with, you know, when the fans watching.
Oh, and that's why I didn't. Yeah.
That's why
off.
Socially distancing. So it's a shame, because it means if we get 50 Ramble fans in there, Vish would put in performance
be
like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
He's like Donald Trump.
Yeah. We could squeeze an extra 10% out of him, man. Yeah. Don't worry about that.
It could probably hopefully get a bit more than that.
What's 10% of fuck off? I think the other factor is just very simply that the ball's in play a lot more as well.
What the stats on that? I haven't seen that. That's interesting.
Well, so they did it after the Bundesliga finished their 2019-20 season, and I think they found it was your ball's in play for, I think, just over 10 minutes more than usual.
Is that because no one wants to hit it into the stands because someone has to go and fetch it?
Because the balls are right there to pick up, and obviously fans don't keep the balls when you boot them into the stands and stuff like that.
Right.
And I think that has a factor because...
So there's more opportunity to score goals, basically.
Yeah, and also, you know, no one's really had a pre-season, no one's had a chance to work on defensive shape. That's the one thing that goes straight away. It's the tactical side of it.
Mm.
The fitness goes to a point, but it's the tactical side of it.
That in the difference between top-level club football and international football, that the managers don't get a chance to work so much with the players that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well, Chelsea themselves will be hoping that they can do their part in keeping the goals down. Big Thiago Silva. Ooh, Thiago Silva.
You started off too low there.
Did I?
Yeah, you want to be going, oh, Thiago Silva.
I was leaving that to you. You do the high ones, I do the low ones. and Vish is one extra one.
Yeah.
There's no dead wood.
You just come in with like your own thing. You're freestyling.
Yeah, you're freestyling, mate.
Exactly, yeah. Turned 36 this week.
Yeah. Yeah, a clean sheet on his
marvellous,
debut.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's great to see him.
Brassel was reticent. Brassel was worried that it could blow up in his face, because he's gone from the Champions League final to a League Cup game against Barnsley.
Oh, come on.
He might get complacent, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, well, I think that's unlikely. But Frank Lampard said about Thiago Silva, he gave us a lot on the pitch, but he also gave us something for me on the night in the dressing room.
Oh, wow. Has he said that out loud?
Yeah.
What could that be?
He did look very, very pleased with it.
Are you suggesting that Thiago Silva had sex with Frank Lampard?
How dare you suggest that I'm suggesting that? All I'm saying
is... You might have said that, Vish. We couldn't possibly comment.
Yeah. Well, you actually cut in because that was only half of the quote. And on the pitch of a leader with authority in terms of his demands on others.
Yeah.
Does that clear it up for you?
I think it does, to a point. I was wondering about his language skills.
I was as well.
Because I suppose, you know, he can't necessarily... Maybe there's some universal words that he could use that would be understood. But I reckon it would be... You're kind of cool by association playing with Thiago Silva, aren't you?
Yeah, but Lampard talked about that. He obviously didn't speak English, or very little, if he does at all.
I thought he does.
Well, Lampard was saying there is a little bit of... People said there was potential language barrier, but Lampard said, I don't think that matters, because when you see him barking orders and shouting people's names...
You know what
he
means.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think the way Lampard spoke about him, he was like, oh, yes, this is
what we need,
exactly what we need. Now, they may only have him for a season because of his age. You never know. He could do...
Two-year deal, but he might not. I guess he might.
Okay, so it'd be one or two, you would think, would be all they get, but it just sets the foundation, and for some of the younger players coming through, very promising.
And the other aspect to it, I think, that's really important is to Lampard is that I think he clearly wants to work with players who are so professional. Because if you look at what Jose Mourinho says about Lampard as a player, best professional I've ever worked with. Like, it was incredible.
It'll help Lampard as a manager as well.
Yeah, of course.
To have a general like that out on the pitch. Yeah. And Mourinho benefited from that, from Terry.
Does it help you to have this general on the pitch in here?
Vish indeed.
Vish then, yeah.
Yeah.
5'7" general.
It's all right. It's not wrong with that.
What's wrong
with that? Napoleon.
Exactly.
We
look what happened to him.
Kate Mason was defending Napoleon the other day. Oh,
Listen,
really,
that does not surprise me in any way at all.
Blood sticking together.
Yeah, because you know Napoleon was quite famously not actually that short. He was like average height.
He was
of
his time. Yeah,
yeah. But it's obviously called the Napoleon complex now.
I thought he was great in Bill and Ted though. But Chelsea are on the verge of signing Edouard Mendy.
I love that dance he did at the end. And
28 years old he is. Now, people are...
Sold Pedro, didn't he?
He did.
Don't make it obvious.
Yeah. People are sort of wondering about this. He's not played that much as a number one, if you look at his stats. He had a couple of full seasons recently. So it's a reasonably high price tag. But if people are wondering what's going on here, I mean, I was asking Senior Brassel about him because he has more knowledge than probably anybody on this. But Andy seemed to think that, as I'm sure a few people would as well, that this is not a signing to replace Kepa. Because, again, if you look at this goalkeeper, you know, he's a handy keeper, he knows what he's doing, of course, but he's not a huge superstar coming in who's, you know, been playing an awful lot of first-team football for a big club. So he's coming in there to really challenge Kepa, I think.
Yeah.
Because Kepa's too much. It's too much money for Kepa to just be chucked out.
Kepa's not so much a goalkeeper, he's more a kind of moderate-sized country's GDP.
You could
and
say.
It's very difficult to kind of... Go say, you're off now, mate. See you later.
Yeah.
And so I think it's probably a wise move, isn't it? I don't know that much about Mendy. I'll obviously defer to Brassel's knowledge, as I do every single show I'm on with him. But, you know, it makes sense to bring someone in to at least compete a bit more because of Caballero's age and he knows the stages of career he's at. And maybe if there's no one to challenge him, it's going to essentially... could make the problem worse, basically. Would you go along with that, Viv?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a similar situation with Manchester United with regards to when... Actually, I think Brassel said this yesterday on the pod, but when Sergio Romero played, you knew he was playing as a second-string player.
Yeah.
And that's the same with Caballero. Yeah. You know, Kepa will know that, okay, I'm still number one here. I also think Chelsea have got to finesse this, and I think so far they're doing it well, but they've got to finesse it because if they come into a situation where they want to sell Kepa... His price tag is going to be judged on what they paid on Mendy. Because other clubs are going to think, right, well, if you've only paid, you know, 30 million or whatever it is for the guy who's replacing, we're not going to pay more than 30 million for this write-off that you're, you know, you want to get rid of.
Do you think he is a write-off then?
No, I don't. I think they've done it in the right way. I know we slated him for his mistakes against Liverpool. But I think
is a key part of this show. You know, if someone plays like shit, you've got to say that.
No, of course. But I think like when we... maybe in a year's time, if he has rediscovered that form, I think how the next week, month goes when Mendy's ingrained in the side and things like selection are going to play a huge part in where they want to be, which is Kepa back as an unequivocal first 11 player in form and, you know, justify that price tag that they paid.
It reminds me of what Manchester United did with David De Gea. You know, there was a lot of question marks over De Gea and was it Lindegaard? It was a sub keeper. I forget.
It was Lindegaard.
Yeah, Lindegaard played like a couple of big Champions League games and stuff.
Were they
like
purchased
that
at the same time?
Possibly. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But you know, David Haye was then sort of, you know, it was done in phases and sort of stages, which could be the case. Talking of goalkeepers, we go to Fleetwood Town 2, Everton 5. Jordan Pickford with errors for both goals. Ancelotti said the first goal was a bad pass to Pickford, putting him under pressure. Luke, you disagree?
Well, I don't necessarily disagree. I just don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. I think it can be both of those things, can't it?
Boot it.
I do think that, and I think that there's clearly a, as everyone who's probably listened to this knows, there's a movement now where goalkeepers start attacks. They need to be good with their feet, need to be able to pass the ball properly, and the best goalkeepers in the world can do all those things. No question about that. And generally speaking, Pickford's probably one of Pickford's strengths, but there's a difference between a general tactical approach and you have to do that all the time, no matter what the circumstances are. And I think, if you've got the ball 1 yard out from your own goal and you're getting closed down, there's nothing wrong with booting it. Mm-hmm. If you're booting it one time in 50, that doesn't mean you've changed your overall tactical approach. It means that you're making the right decision at the right time. You know, defenders are expected to play with the ball now a lot more. But how many times these days still do you see a counter-attack happening, a defender who's back on his own running back towards goal, will just play the ball out of play? So we can reset, we can not concede a goal, and we can defend again properly. It doesn't mean their approach overall has changed. It means that you're making the right decision at the right time to avert a concession of a goal. So I think Pickford's got a track record here of not making the right decision at the right time. Now, it's a weird, almost like a paradox, that he is very good with his feet and he technically decent, but at the same time, it's his biggest weakness because he can't make the right decision at the right time. And I think... And I want to make a big shout here, and you guys can, you know, can crop it out for social and get everyone to laugh at me. I don't mind. I'll take it on the chin. I think the only barrier, based on the manager they've got and the players they've signed and the start they've had, I think the only barrier that Everton have got to push them for a top four place this season, and that's a competitive league, but I think they can do it, is the goalkeeper.
Anyway.
Should have left a gap there, so crop out easily.
Sorry about that, everybody.
I do. I think they've got a lot of potential. I think they've made a lot of changes. I know it says it's 5-2 and the Fleetwood aren't as good a team.
Yep.
But really, Everton dominated the game. It was only the two mistakes that kind of let Fleetwood in. I don't know if you feel the same way about Everton. Vish.
I mean, Vish, it was another 5-2 win for the Toffees so soon after the last one. Do you think they're in for a shout for top four? Are they thinking about those things?
Sorry, I'm just drafting my quote retweet of hashtag mug. Just on the Pickford thing, I don't think he messes around for that particular mistake if he's not playing Fleetwood Town. I think there was a hint of arrogance about what he was trying to do with the ball because he had two players closing him down.
I disagree, Vish. I think
defending him now.
I think he's too busy. Pickford is too busy all the time.
But there could be a shout to say that, I mean, if he was concerned about the pitch or something like that, you know, the pass was to his goal and he thinks, I need to take a touch to make sure it doesn't sort of go over me.
I think he was trying to beat one of them. I think he was trying to beat them on the outside, on the left.
And do you think?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Either or, it was an error by the keeper.
So I'm writing a piece on goalkeepers at the moment, specifically on how a goalkeeper gets back into form.
So you know more than anyone then?
Yeah.
In the world.
Go on then, educate us.
Yeah.
So Pickford came up a couple of times as someone who, you know, makes high-profile mistakes and is picked out for those mistakes because he is the England goalkeeper, and understandably so. That's, you know, that's the burden of his position and his privilege, I suppose. But one of the other things about Pickford is that he... It's gonna sound really stupid because these are costly mistakes, but he keeps making those mistakes because he keeps trying to do those things that he's good at. You know, he is good with his feet. He is required to distribute the ball in a certain way, and so you know it's no different to a midfielder misplacing a pass. You know, someone who might have an 82% pass ratio because he plays ambitious passes, for example. Mm-hmm. The real issue with Pickford, and as you said about him being too busy, I think it was, is that he's too active. He's too vocal.
This has been a level that Joe Hart.
Yeah, and absolutely, yeah. And it's one of the phenomenons of modern goalkeepers, excellent modern goalkeepers, when you think of people like Alisson, Edison, is that they are quite quiet. They'll talk to their defence, they'll organise their defence, but they're not shouters for the sake of it. You know, Ben Foster's probably, well, last year was probably the loudest goalkeeper in the league, and, you know, that doesn't equate to, you know, having organisation.
Do you think that's a factor, though?
I think it's a factor to a point. I think
it's a very broadsheet opinion.
No, but I think if you're preoccupied with image, then you're not going to be able to concentrate on the most important stuff. And I think one of the other elements to it is that one of the things that I was told about Alisson in particular is how much his faith and things like meditation help him outside of football, and how he uses that calmness on the field. And I think he's able to kind of, he'll make a mistake and able to go past it because I think he has a degree of
mental toughness.
Yeah, mental toughness, but also just he can, you know, he knows what's important in life. I suppose he has context to his errors, and he understands that he's playing in an excellent team and playing a certain role. And I think Pickford in particular doesn't. I think he's really preoccupied with holding on to this England spot, with being England's goalkeeper, and while doing all these ambitious things. I think eventually it's going to wear on him, I think.
He's got to be very careful. And the reason for that, I think, is because 19-20 season, I think he ranked 23rd out of 28 goalkeepers in terms of save percentage as well.
Wow.
So if he gets to the point now where he can't be trusted to do the stuff that Gareth Southgate has very pointedly said he's in the team for, he's going to have a problem, isn't he? You've got people like Nick Pope, who is very solid, keeps a lot of clean sheets at Burnley, appears to be a more and more credible alternative as time moves on. He's going to find himself without that England jersey if he's not careful.
He is, gentlemen. It was despite Pickford's efforts, it was a good win for Everton.
You think they've got a lot of potential with the manager they've got and the players they've signed?
Yeah, absolutely, of course they do. Yeah, I think Everton have been very entertaining this season, and anyone who would suggest otherwise is a fool, quite frankly. Speaking of which, Joey Barton was pleased that Everton turned up with a strong side, as it showed Fleetwood respect. And I thought, well, considering how much respect Joey has given others over the years, he knows respect when he sees it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go for a quick break, and then we're going to talk about Newcastle United.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Before we talk about Sir Joel Linton, let's have some emails. The new email, of course. Is it still new? It's just a reminder that the email address is show@footballramble.com. Don't send it anywhere else, you punks.
Well, you can, but it won't be read by us.
Yeah, you could send emails to whoever you want.
Send your football opinions to people you think might like them.
That's true.
And include us if you want it read out on this show.
But if you've got a good one,
send it here, yeah.
Show@footballramble.com.
It's all content.
Gerard Moran writes, just a thought on the 1 point for a half-time win idea brought up by an emailer this week on the Football Ramble.
Can I just say, Marcus, let you know... People do this, right? And we regularly just embarrass them.
Yeah.
Right? They still do it.
That's right.
No one stops.
Yeah, it's like Jerry Springer.
Do you remember that?
People still go on Jerry Springer. I've got something to tell you, love. All right, what are you going to tell me? Well, let's go on Jerry Springer.
Oh, it doesn't sound like good news.
Is it bad news? Yeah.
Like the guy who emailed us every week for about a year about the winner of the FA Cup get the Champions League place.
Yeah.
Every single week he would email in.
I think he was a Russian
bot. It's like queuing up for the school bully.
Take my money.
Have you noticed with my Jansport bag, if you pull really hard down, I'll fall over? We'll give that
I've
a little
got a Jansport bag.
Yeah.
Don't do that to me. You could reach. sorry, I interrupted Gerard, Marcus. Sorry.
Right, yes. Gerard said, if this was implemented, imagine a scenario where Manchester City needed a point on the last day to win the title. I can't imagine that at all.
Yeah.
They're playing Aston Villa, who are in the relegation zone, and they need a win to secure their Premier League status. Villa know they have no chance, so devise a strategy where they put no effort in the first half and let Manchester City score early. When the halftime whistle goes, Manchester City win the league and the celebrations start early in the halftime. In the dressing room at half time, Edison, Laporte, De Bruyne, and the lads come out tanked up on champagne for the second half, and Villa capitalise, win the game 2-1. Hang on, I thought they got hammered in the first half. 2-1.
I like the idea. Gerrard's idea doesn't fall down at all with the idea that Aston Villa, we're going to very specifically let you score only one goal, Man City, yeah, and you'll have no say in that.
Yeah, well, Gerrard finishes the email by saying, think of the scenes after the match. Well, yeah, okay, that's convinced us all.
Another way of putting it, Gerard, think of the scenes after the match, which will literally be the death of the sport in this country. So, I mean, enjoy it while you can, because it won't be up there afterwards.
Yeah. Greg Peterson and Toby Austin both followed up with some finalised tables based on the points for winning each half idea from yesterday. Greg writes, hi, Ramblers. Thanks to soccerstats.com, I've worked out the table for the 2019-20 Premier League with 3 points for a win, 1 point for a draw, 1 point for winning the first half, and 1 point for winning the second half.
Seriously.
We are waist high in this now. What is in 2019?
Should these people be put into care? What's going on?
I mean, the Football Ramble is ultimately a community project.
It is a community project.
Yeah, but it's a gated community project.
This is how people want to spend their time, Vish.
When you turned up, maybe, Vish, but I was very happy to be employed by this operation. 2019-20, not much changes. Not many changes. The top six remain the same. That gives you a bit of faith in the current system, I think.
Yeah.
And the three teams that got relegated are the same. So I think we can all breathe a sigh of relief there. In fact, the only changes are Arsenal squeaking by Wolves, as he put it, for seventh, Palace moving up a spot, and Watford and Bournemouth swapping places inside the relegation zone. Yeah. So interesting. So actually, it wouldn't really make too much of a difference. Because it's a Wednesday afternoon here in Iowa. Well, okay.
Ramble International.
Yeah, and I'm
Ramble
bored.
Worldwide.
I checked the 2015-16 table as well, hoping that the general insanity of that season would produce something exciting here as well. Here's the actual movement. Spurs take second place away from Arsenal, and Manchester United fall from fifth to seventh. Would that have changed anything? No, of course not. Because Manchester United won the FA Cup and Man City won the League Cup, United, Southampton, West Ham would have headed to the Europa League the next year anyway. My goodness, it was a boring day for you. In summary, it sure looks like the point for winning a half system doesn't change much. Well then, we don't need to employ it.
And let's never talk about it again.
Let's put that to bed.
Yeah.
I can't believe he's gone through that and figured out, I've realised at the end that nothing has changed. Shouldn't you spend more? What's his name? He's probably thinking.
His Greg. Name was Greg. Yeah. So I think
focus on the Iowa caucus.
I don't know. Greg Peterson and Toby Austin, fine men.
It would have been still a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
If the result had been, oh, guess what happened? Yeah, Aston Villa won the league or whatever. Mm-hmm. It would still be a waste of time. It's still totally irrelevant. The fact that nothing has changed says that we don't need to be talking about this again.
The whole thing was a complete waste of time.
I think it's the enthusiasm with which we greet the emails that made us.
You say that, but it makes people email in more.
Yeah, I think they're trying to, I don't know. I feel a bit like Simon Cowell in the early stages of...
same
X
trousers.
Factor or whatever.
Same trousers.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Same amount of work done as well.
But you guys,
I beg your pardon. He works very hard, and I don't. Okay, yeah. don't sully Simon Cowell's name like that.
I meant surgically, but go on. Yeah. Oh, I see.
you guys. Don't understand that if you go on the show and you're really nice, you say we'd love to hear from you. Please email in show at footballramble.com.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
You get nothing. If you say, you listen, you bunch of absolute losers, your ideas are trash. Don't bother emailing us.
It's essentially come and have a go if you think you're hard enough.
Yeah. Treat them mean, keep them keen. Yeah.
Gentlemen, we promised Newcastle United chat, and we're going to give it to the good listeners right now. They hammered those little slugs, Morecambe 7-0. Joel Linton with a near hat trick, Vish.
Near hat trick. Yeah.
Two-thirds of a hat trick. Spurned the chance, of course, for a hat trick.
Yeah. That'll be a complaint of Pete's, wouldn't it? We didn't get
hat-trick, yeah, big
it?
Time.
Yeah, well, why bother scoring the other two then?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's an amazing moment where the ball comes over and he's on the line and he doesn't try and put it in.
He's far too polite there. Maybe one might say, oh, well, actually, we've seen that before and it'd be given offside. There was no way with that group of players in the box. But yeah, he should be just, I don't care if that's.
He looked
stealing.
Like he was scared of he was going to hurt himself on the post.
Do you think? No.
He's got quite good hair. You wouldn't want to ruin that, would you?
I don't think he would at any stage playing football.
Well,
really.
He's got a couple. Don't be greedy.
That's true. One of them was a belter.
Was.
Uh-huh.
And I think there was quite a lot. I mean, look, it's Morecambe away from home. They had a man sent off. We know that. There was an own goal in the mix, a goalkeeper error. Like I say, it's incredible to watch football these days.
Mm.
I mean, there's no fans. Fine. That's bad, obviously, for lots of reasons. But the fact is, I mean, a lot is going on the pitch at the moment.
Yeah.
And like, there's a lot to process.
Yeah.
But there was quite a lot of good individual performances from Newcastle. I thought Murphy played well. I thought Isaac Hayden played well. Mm-hmm. I thought Almiron played well. Joel Linton played well. And fine, it is only Morecambe, but Joel Linton's not exactly set the world on fire since he's been there.
Ten man Morecambe.
Mm. Morecambe unwise.
Well, yeah. Do you know what? Actually, I was thinking about Newcastle. I was thinking, you know, what's Dennis Wise doing with himself? And surely
that would be great.
Surely
they should have to hire him.
I know.
In some capacity.
Oh dear, people in Iowa are listening to this again. What are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Look it up.
Trashed ass Morecambe and Wise.
Yeah. Just call it half time.
Yeah. Do they go through or do they not go through?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So they certainly put them to the sword.
Any glimpse of Big Brucey?
More than a glimpse normally. But Miguel Almiron's goal, which was in the 20th minute to make it 2-0.
Went round the keeper.
The way he scored that.
He did, but then I think he lost a bit of...
He roofed it from 3 yards.
But I think you go past the keeper, you hit it in first time.
No, but this is the thing. This is my point, Mitch. The way he scored that, the way he kind of just trotted around the keeper and was like, I'll sod it.
Yeah.
It was like the eighth of an 8-0 win.
Yeah.
And it was only 1-0 at the time, 20 minutes gone.
Yeah.
I think there's that moment where he puts it onto his stronger left foot and then he panics because he thinks he's getting closed down.
I don't know. I thought it was a beautiful finish.
It was nice to watch. I mean, what is the kind of general consensus then about when you go round the goalkeeper, how you should finish it off? Are you saying you should slot it first time in a classy fashion? Because didn't George Best once flick it up and head it in?
Did probably.
Big fan of that. I'm a fan of two ways. I think one is the hit it in first time. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter the weaker foot. The other is, I think, what Milan Baroš did a while ago for the Czech Republic, maybe against the Netherlands in a Euro qualifier, where he went past the keeper and then he got the ball under control again and then went to boot it in and a defender slid. I love that.
I'm all over that. That's great, isn't it?
A bit of misdirection, basically. I don't mind that.
Yeah, I saw it.
You a fan of going around the keeper, Marcus?
Very much
your
so.
Time?
Very
in your
much
time,
so.
You were a forward.
Yeah,
you like, still are.
Yeah.
You've moved back now. But when you were a pacey forward, would you like to go around the keeper? Would it be an option for you when you're 1-on-1?
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
I think it's the option.
But I think
you've often when you see the odd clip coming from, it's usually South America this where like a player goes around the keeper and disrespectfully like gets on all fours and like nods it over the line.
And it gets booted up in the air.
For some reason,
it's a riot.
That is an unwritten rule that gives the opposition absolute carte blanche to kick the shit out of that player. Yeah. I don't know what there's nothing more disrespectful.
The best thing about those South American fights that you see on the pitch
is that they
understand their feet are their weapons.
Why would
I go in and start swinging haymakers? Yeah. I can't punch, but I can kick really hard.
I've got studs on. Yeah. I'm going in. And also as well, the players come from everywhere. It's like they're camouflaged. It's like some sort of SAS operation. Like they're coming from the pitch. Like I didn't realise he was there.
Usually the ref's being chased.
It is disgracefully...
None of that happened at Morecambe. We should make that absolutely clear.
It should be a form of self-defence because Carl McGrath essentially is basically fighting dirty.
Yeah.
You know. And so maybe that should be a thing, you know, South American footballers after something disrespectful has happened. Because, not enough footballers use their feet to kick people.
Not enough.
Independent journalist, Constitution Hunter Raja. What do you think about it?
What else would you really like to see more of at Football Vish? Fans invading, perhaps.
A point for winning the half.
Point for kicking someone with your studs?
You should be able to kick anyone who comes up with that idea again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're just because no one really, you know, when people swing punches, they do it from such a distance, they never really get any contact. Use your feet, man.
Yeah.
Kick kicking back into football.
Yeah.
That's my campaign. Kick kicking back into football.
Okay. Luke and I are very much distanced from.
No,
that.
I'm all for it.
I might kick you a bit, actually.
I'm all for it for the point where I want it to happen. But if it does happen, I'll step back and say it was your idea.
Yeah, clever. Yeah, slipping up the chain.
Yeah.
Anyway, gentlemen.
Good win for Newcastle.
Very good win for Newcastle. You cannot deny what happened there.
I don't want to.
No, exactly. Yeah. You'd be ridiculous to do such a thing. I think that's the EFL Cup nicely wrapped up in a neat little package. There were obviously other good wins for other teams, and they marched on to the next round. Brentford against Fulham, for example.
Some games tonight as well.
There are some games tonight as well. Gentlemen, I'd like to bring to the table West Ham United.
Yeah.
What the hell's going on there?
Could have said that at any point
in the last
show.
Few years. Yeah. I mean, this is off the back of David Sullivan giving quite a sort of, in one sense, a very honest interview, and then another sense, that could be extrapolated out to an honest but very strange interview. There's some sort of choice quotes from Mr. Sutherland. I mean, he said, you know, we've got a very unbalanced squad. Unfortunately, at the moment, the players the manager wants, we can't get. He'll be spending 18 hours a day trying to find players.
Was he looking under? The way he says that, it's like he's looking under the bed.
Yeah.
Or turning rocks over in the park.
Yeah, I mean, is he getting any sleep?
No winger under there. Just a couple of woodlice.
Yeah, I mean...
they can't plan the wing, tiny.
Well, Sullivan made the sort of point that he talked about the finances, which is understandable, and he said, you know, we've also got the fact that we'll probably get no gate money for the rest of the season. Got to keep the club afloat. Okay, well, that's a fair point. It was obviously a very, very tricky situation for football clubs, and there's football clubs who are suffering far more than that, of course. Not that it's one-upmanship. But then he goes on to say, you know, we've chased dreams the last 2 years and bought a pile of players, as he put it, who haven't impacted the club. Maybe they will over the coming seasons because there are some damn good players in there. But again, it's quite strange for such a prominent figure at a football club to come out with this sort of thing, Vish. And it's the reaction on social media has not been in his favour, it's fair to say. What did you make of this?
You know, as someone who works in my profession as a journalist, it's always, you know, having someone talking that openly who's heavily involved in a club is, you know, it kind of...
It's what you want.
It lends itself to transparency. And I suppose even for a fan as well, you want to know what they're thinking, even if you don't necessarily agree with it.
Yeah, because I don't want to chastise him too much because he's been very, very honest, but...
Yeah.
But it's... Yeah, go on, sorry.
The thing about chasing dreams and the pile of players is interesting because if you look at West Ham's squad, it's... You know, it's like the football squad equivalent of TK Maxx. There's some good things in there. There's a lot of junk.
You've got to really look for it.
Got a rummage.
Well, yeah. Is that what Moyes is doing when he's spending 18 hours trying to find players? Is that just his own squad?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he just doesn't know how to use them. But they have a squad which is reflective of what they've tried to do over the last few years. They've aimed really high, and then they've got people like Felipe Anderson and, you know, Yarmolenko, and then they find themselves in a relegation battle, which is why they have to put stock in someone like Mikel Antonio, who technically isn't as good as them, but they know he's going to work very hard. And if you look at that front
three... He's very effective.
Yeah, and if you look at the front three that Moyes trusts implicitly, it's Jared Bowen, Mikel Antonio and Pablo Fornals. And what they all have in common is they're all hard workers. You know, Jared Bowen and Fornals bring that technical quality, but they're all going to run for you. And so... This was always going to be the issue with Moyes, where he is going to be fearful of his job because of what happened the first time around. So he's not necessarily going to, you know, put too much stock in, as I mentioned, Anderson and Yarmolenko. And so they're going to get rid of him. If they start well, they'll keep him. But if they will get to a point where they'll probably get rid of him, and then they'll probably think, right, we're West Ham, where do we want to be? We want to be at the top half of the table. Let's get ourselves a top half of the table manager. And the only thing that's going to be different this time around is, you know, the financial restrictions around coronavirus. And Swiss Ramble on Twitter, who I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with, he's done a really excellent breakdown of the...
Named himself after us.
Yeah, he did.
That's true, by the way.
Is it really?
Yeah. Didn't it, Luke?
Love that.
I believe so, yeah.
But he's done a very good thread on what Premier League clubs are going to lose by not having fans in. And I think, you know, West Ham are in a situation now where they do have a lot of these players who they now suddenly can't offload because there's no money elsewhere either. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're in a peculiar bind. You know, just to go back to the point of David Sullivan, I think there is greater transparency needed at West Ham anyway, because, you know, the Giangana sale, the way the players came out about that, and, you know, to have your club captain Mark Noble, who is unequivocally West Ham, who is someone who's going to abide by you no matter what you do, the fact that he's stepping out online and making such a statement was quite jarring, I thought. But well within his rights to, and absolutely right to, but I thought it does speak of a club in conflict there.
The current ownership have trashed the club.
They've
absolutely trashed it, and there's a number of different reasons how they've done it, and why they've done it is, I guess, known only to them. It's either through a mixture of incompetence or dishonesty, or probably possibly both. I heard the interview with him on TalkSport, David Sullivan. I thought Jim White, who is a nice guy, friend of mine and a good person.
Friend of the Ramble, you could say, contributing to our live shows.
He's a friendly guy and a nice man and good at his job generally, but I think he dropped the ball a little bit on this interview because he didn't ask him those questions about Dean Garner. He gave him a bit of a soft soaping, which Jim gets a lot of criticism for. I think in this case, it was certainly the case. But generally speaking, West Ham fans, what the people need to understand is, I don't necessarily want to speak on behalf of them, but if I may, just for a moment, West Ham fans have been used to having a club that actually cared about them. It was a, yeah, it sounds a bit cliched, mm-hmm. but it's a bit of a community club. This is a club that didn't go through many managers historically until these two came along. They're not used to being lied to so consistently and so regularly about things like, I mean, when I did the show on radio, I'd get people ringing all the time. And, you know, it's easy to dismiss people, you know, oh, West Ham fans moaning or whatever, or they're this type of person. But the fact is,
there's a uniqueness to it, especially if you compare it to other London clubs.
But the fact is that they felt a real big part of this community, and they were told things, and I've seen it. I've heard it firsthand. They were told things on pamphlets and letters and things dished out onto chairs and seats at Upton Park at the bowling ground saying, don't worry, when we move to the new stadium, you won't be any further away from the pitch than you are now. We give you a guarantee. Or they'll say, we have to do this because we want to kick on and we can't compete for major honours if we don't move to a bigger stadium. Well, fine, the pandemic's happened now and there's far bigger things happening in the world that are difficult for football clubs and for people generally. But they've had 4 years and they've done nothing. And it's been so haphazard and it's been so dishonest. Why has he given an interview to Talk Sport when he won't speak to any of the fans? Why has he not got a channel where he can speak to the fans directly? Because he doesn't want to.
Well, you could argue that's what he was doing there.
He's given an interview to a radio station. Mm-hmm. There's perfectly legitimate ways for him to speak directly to fans. They've got databases full of season ticket holders. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, they've not done that. They've not explained the Grady Diangana situation. They've not explained the lack of coherence in their transfer strategy or the direction for the club. And they've continually lied to their fans over and over again. And the reason it's important above all this is because football fans of different clubs have a lot more in common than they don't, and it's regularly used as a partisan thing to go, oh, laugh at West Ham, laugh at this, laugh at that. People need to get real about how football's going to look in a year or 2 years' time when this pandemic hopefully finally gets through. But it's not being talked enough that teams further down the pyramid are going to go out of business without some kind of rescue package. People are trying to say it. You know, the guy, who Rick Parry, who runs the Football League, he's saying it on the radio all the time. No one's listening. It could happen to bigger clubs as well if they're not run properly. And I just feel a deep amount of... You know, I just feel passionately that fans deserve better than this, no matter who they support. And in the case of West Ham, I just think it's been an absolute scandal. And the way that they've conducted themselves and the way that they've run this club in the years they've been there, it's just been nothing short of an absolute disgrace. I think it needs to be said more.
I think it's funny when he says, you know, unfortunately, we just have a very unbalanced squad.
It's your fault. Well, that's the problem, Marcus. I don't want to take any responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry for ranting on, but you're either incompetent, in which case it's your fault, or you're not up to the job and you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. Mm. And either way, it's your fault. You need to take responsibility. You can't, because what will happen with these types of owners, these two here, is if they were to win an FA Cup, would you think they're going to be first up there to get the trophy? Of course they fucking are. Are they going to be on top of the bus? Of course they will.
Luke, we'll probably never know.
That's the sad thing.
But in response to that...
So if you want to take the glory, you've got to take the responsibility.
In response to that, one of our fine followers, Sam on Twitter, said, it can't get more balanced than this. It just can't.
Yeah. Well, it's a sad situation for a proud historic club, in my opinion.
It really is. It really is.
I think the one thing that's also important to say for West Ham fans is that it's not just linked to what's happening on the field. There have been issues with regards to supporters groups being almost blacklisted by the club. There's also a situation where, having been such a strong community club, that, you know, they're not doing half of what they did at the bowling ground, despite the fact they've got a much bigger base. For example, you know, they're on the doorstep of Newham, which I think is more than 50% of kids live in poverty, and they've talked a good game about what they do when they're in the area, and they just haven't come good on, and, you know, almost all of those promises, to be honest. So there are non-footballing reasons, important life reasons, why West Ham fans are all the more pissed off with their owners as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gentlemen, let's finish the football ramble with a little bit more positive news about potential investors and owners of football clubs. We're going to Wrexham, of course. The club have issued a statement with some potential investors. Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney are the names. How about this?
I just didn't see it coming.
Well, no. And some people did, because Ryan Reynolds, somebody on Twitter 8 years ago...
said, is Ryan Reynolds coming to Wrexham?
Yeah, to which he replied. Wonderfully replied to it, saying, I've waited 8 years to reply to it.
But the one thing I didn't quite realise, but obviously I know Ryan Reynolds is, I didn't know how successful he is as a businessman. So he's got a gin business called Aviation Gin, which he sold for $600 million.
Christ.
So I'm telling you now, Wrexham, either for a combination of money and or gin, the party is coming to Wrexham, if it happens, of course.
Uh-huh.
It's an incredible situation. Right? Why do you reckon they've chosen Wrexham, Vish?
I have no idea.
No disrespect to Wrexham. I've never been there. I'm sure it's lovely, but it's not a footballing powerhouse, is it?
I reckon they just, on the name, it's quite a funny name, isn't it? Americans like funny names. They sit Ryan Reynolds.
I mean, they're in the fifth tier of English football, so no, you're right, it's not a powerhouse.
Over years of being married to an American, Vish's insight into the American psyche is that Americans like funny names.
I mean, I'm living proof of that.
Checkmate. That is very good. Chapeau.
Oh, dear. I loved the statement that said, Mr. McElhenney and Mr. Reynolds will put forward their vision. Yeah. Marvellous.
Well, I think this will open people up to. Obviously, a lot of people know Ryan Reynolds, but Rob McElhenney is a hilarious man. If you don't watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you should. But also, when you watch it, I think you'll be struck by how mental it is and then think, oh, wow, he's taking over our club.
Okay, so right. So it's the mind of a maniac. Yeah. Do you know that Ryan Reynolds' middle name is Rodney? So he's Ryan Rodney Reynolds.
That is very pleasing.
R-cubed.
Very pleasing indeed. Yeah. Reynolds was in, he did the voice of Pokemon.
Yes, Detective Pikachu.
I mean, that's not
right?
what he's best known for.
No, well, bear with. What was the game? Pokemon Go or something where people were running? Could they do sort of Wrexham, but you have to sort of find the players? That
that'd be great. That'd be good. Yeah. A little tie-in.
There you are, you see.
I don't think Ryan Reynolds owes the rights to Pokemon, though.
No, but...
That would make him very wealthy.
Yeah, but I mean, anybody can rip somebody off, you know, just it's the legal repercussions that happen after that.
Isn't he also Van Wilder party liaison? So, I mean, that is, you know, again, it's just going to be party time, surely.
Vish seemed a bit unhappy with that. What's Ryan Reynolds' best work then, Vish?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Well,
didn't realise you were a completist, mate.
Deadpool, is that what you're going for?
Yeah, I mean, that was quite good, wasn't it? Mm. Yeah. They're both very sweary. I wonder how that's going to manifest itself in...
In football, where it's so clean.
No, but in terms of, I think people are going to come across their work, you know, diehard Wrexham fans and be like, oh, wow, okay. I'm
wonderful
quite
owners
to see how this
pumping
goes.
Money into the club, but, oh, dear, potty-mouthed the pair of them.
It's also great news for people, broadcasters, who base their entire career on doing puns around news. Because Ryan Reynolds coming to football is a big hotbed for puns, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, not focusing on anyone in particular, but
there we are.
Just trying to think of more Reynolds puns.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the Football Ramble for today. It's been an absolute pleasure. On tomorrow's show, I'm back with Luke and Andy.
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Totally. It should be great.
What a fabulous Friday.
Looking forward to that. By the way, a return back to the original Luke's game after a very welcome and enjoyable to listen to deviation last week.
Ever so slight deviation.
It's good, though.
Yeah.
Do you want to play? You want to play?
People are saying...
I don't think he does.
...that I should. No. I don't know whether I should or not, but I probably won't tomorrow.
If you do lose at your own game, you will have to see yourself out, won't you?
No, not necessarily.
No, I think you should.
I mean, England invented football, didn't they? there we are. Until tomorrow. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vish.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you soon.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.